Welcome to Social Quarantine, the podcast. I'm Danielle Laguerre, and I created this podcast to explore how we can stay connected and maintain community even during times of disaster and crisis. Today, I come to you from my kitchen in Buffalo, New York. It's May 11th, and I have been in quarantine for 2 full months. Over the past few weeks, my screen time has skyrocketed. I work, socialize, and study all online now. I am also glued to my screen for another reason, and that is the never-ending flood of information that we all have access to on the internet. With every notification or email that comes in, we're all yearning to find something new or different about the COVID-19 situation that might give us hope or help this all make more sense. Yet there are issues when it comes to trying to make sense of this global crisis. And part of the problem is misinformation. As Liza Potts points out in her book, Social Media in Disaster Response, misinformation explodes across networks during a disaster. Sometimes we don't know when photos are real or photoshopped, or if numbers are accurate or embellished. Sharing content online is so fast and easy, so even the most informed, digitally literate individuals can be misled, especially during a crisis. With all of this in mind, I started to wonder about what misinformation is being spread online right now. So I asked my friends if they've seen any false information or conspiracy theories tied to COVID-19. I was blown away by their answers. Some of the most shocking responses include that there are several A-list celebrities who are involved in a child sex trafficking ring, and that COVID-19 is just a cover-up for this, or that Bill Gates manufactured COVID-19 in order to make money, or that Governor Cuomo never wants school to resume again, and that he only wants New York State to have virtual education from here on out. And the list goes on. There is some really weird stuff out there. I also came across a recent article in the Journal of Medical Internet Research. This article was entitled COVID-19 and the 5G Conspiracy Theory, Social Network Analysis of Twitter Data. In this piece, the authors explore the conspiracy theories shared by Twitter users. One of the most popular theories has linked 5G to the spread of COVID-19. This is, of course, totally inaccurate information, but it's information that went viral thanks to hashtag 5G coronavirus. And this actually led individuals to burn down at least 20 5G towers in the United Kingdom. Then something else was brought to my attention. A viral video called Plandemic. If you haven't already heard, Plandemic is a 26-minute conspiracy theory video that promotes a variety of falsehoods and misinformation relating to COVID-19. This movie was produced by Mickey Willis and stars discredited former medical researcher turned anti-vaxxer Judy Mikovits. Plandemic promotes themes like organizing a large-scale government cover-up, exploiting the virus to make money, and bullying people who are attempting to expose the quote-unquote truth. The movie also claims that the virus must have been released from a laboratory environment and could not possibly be naturally occurring, that masks and gloves actually make people more sick, and that closing beaches during a time like this is insanity because of the healing microbes in the water. None of these claims are supported by reliable medical or scientific evidence. So, in reality, this video does not promote the truth at all. Instead, it features theories that have been reported as discredited in several news sources, including the New York Times, USA Today, NBC News, Yahoo News, and NPR, among many others. So why are people drawn to this video? Forbes reports that Plandemic has been extremely successful at promoting misinformation for a couple different reasons. First, it taps into people's uncertainty, anxiety, and need for answers. And second, it's packaged in a very professional way, and it uses common conventions people already associate with actual, real documentaries. After reading about Plandemic and all of the other conspiracy theories, I felt like my brain was on fire, and I really wanted to talk to an actual medical professional about these theories and how they stack up against what's actually going on in hospitals right now. Thankfully, I did not have to look far. Today's episode of Social Quarantine is a special episode because I'm not calling anyone on the phone. My guest is already in the house. We are going to chat with my husband, Brian Stewart. Brian is a nurse in the cardiovascular intensive care unit at a local hospital. He is treating COVID-19 patients regularly. Thanks for joining us today, Brian.
Hi, happy to make the cut finally. I've been listening to you interview people. Happy to be here.
How are you holding up with everything right now?
I'm good. We're just taking it day by day. It's can be hard sometimes, exhausting at times, but it's good.
Good. So let's get started. When you were in nursing school, did you ever study the issue of misinformation?
No, we never studied misinformation as like a topic of discussion, but we did in school learn how to analyze and critique and do research through scientific and scholarly journals, as well as where to go to find credible resources and references, but nothing about like misinformation in general.
What do you make of what's happening right now with all of these conspiracy theories?
Honestly, I've been so busy with work that I didn't really know many of them were out there until you started digging into this topic for this podcast.
Until I went into a deep, dark black hole.
Yeah, until you did the deep dive. I was kind of in a little bit of a foxhole with just coming to work, going to bed, getting up, going back to work, and then just getting in some running when I can squeeze it in. But other than that, I had no idea that there were prolific conspiracy theories out there on COVID-19.
So then you haven't seen a lot of misinformation being spread over the internet lately pertaining to COVID-19?
No, not like anything like the Plandemic before you had me watch it. I only thing that I had really been seeing was during the beginning of everything ramping up with the pandemic, where like the home remedies to safeguard yourself against COVID-19 infection, like gargling salt water and some of those other like nonsense that was kind of floating around Facebook, but nothing like mass government conspiracies. I didn't see anything like that.
To be clear, gargling salt water is not going to cure COVID-19 or prevent it.
Correct.
Okay.
That is not going to do you any good.
All right. Well, speaking of Plandemic, can you tell us more about what your reaction was to this movie?
I could see how people could get caught up in it, but I think that's just because of like the combination of they just push the unknown and so much is still unknown. But other than that, my opinion was I thought it was pretty disjunct in its storyline and didn't do things that normal documentaries would do, like introduce credible sources like the doctors that were all webcamming, and somehow not a single one of them, their name or their credentials was introduced. The main lady, I already forgot her name.
She doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like her talking about her research paper, but she like couldn't share. She didn't have the authority to share her own research paper or whatever she worked on. Like, I just thought that was kind of odd. Mainly the finding doctors to throw, you know, fun snippets in that were applicable to their theme of the documentary, but no introduction of who they were or what their credentials were, or, you know, that I thought that was pretty telltale that this is not something you want to be taking to the bank.
Yeah, it was very troubling, and still I have no idea who those screaming individuals wearing scrubs were.
Yeah, me either.
So even with all of that, why do you think that it is still persuading so many people to feel like they've been, you know, misled or lied to?
I think it comes down to, like, we don't know a lot, and a lack of knowledge can be infuriating, and people are in places they don't really want to be right now, you know, stuck at home, not making money. And with, you know, authorities like the scientific community, the medical community, still not really having a lot of definitive answers, it leaves big holes in, you know, satisfying people's, like, explanation of why they have to stay home and why they can't go out and do things. And it's easy to get angry and use this as an outlet of being like, well, this is just a control mechanism, and we really, they're infringing on our liberties and things like that. But I think that's the biggest, there's not good definitive answers for people to satiate their needs.
And what would you say to someone who might feel like their liberties are being taken away from them, even just in terms of being forced to wear a mask?
Well, I mean, I think it stinks and nobody wants to wear a mask, but if they think wearing a mask for a couple of hours when they go to a grocery store, or a couple of minutes when they go to a grocery store, or go drive their car somewhere to do an errand, you know, that does stink. But wearing it for 12 hours, multiple days in a row, stinks even more. So we would, as healthcare workers, would like to also stop wearing the masks. So if everyone could, you know, continue so that we can enjoy our civil liberties again as well, of working without having to put on all the personal protection equipment, that, you know, it does stink, and we're unfortunately all suffering through it together. But the only way that we can continue to get better is if people do take the precautions of wearing masks and limiting their means of transmission of this disease, so that everyone can stop wearing masks, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the arguments in the film was that we shouldn't be wearing masks or gloves in order to strengthen our immunity against COVID-19. Do you feel that there is any accuracy to that?
No. I mean, it's tough because, like, again, it's like a new virus that we have not really had any contact with as a species. And unfortunately, when it's something completely new, and I don't want to use the term novel because I feel like it's beaten to death right now, but when you have no experience with a disease, then there's no way to have immunity, so you are going to get sick. You can't just, like, randomly build up immunity, like, on a low-key scale without a vaccine. Either you are going to get the disease, get very sick, possibly end up in the hospital and end up on a ventilator and go through all of that, what we're seeing right now, or you're, you know, I don't know. I think it's a tough thing with the immunity. You can't just, like, slowly build it up as you would with, like, a vaccine. That's the whole point of vaccines, is to kind of put training wheels on your immunity system, and so that they can be familiarized with the virus, attack the virus, and build up that memory to recognize the virus when it comes around again and have a more full scale response to it.
So in short, wear the mask.
Wear the masks.
Wear the mask.
Okay. I'm sorry I jumbled through that for a second there.
You're good. You're good. We're all jumbling through all of this together right now. In your professional experience, have you seen any doctors being incentivized or pressured in any way to list COVID-19 as the cause of death for patients, as they mentioned in the movie Plandemic?
No, absolutely not. I know from an experience of someone in another hospital that even actually the opposite happened, where doctors were treating a patient that had all of the symptoms, signs and symptoms of being infected with COVID-19, and the patient expired, unfortunately, and they never diagnosed them as a COVID-19. So that if that pressure was there for fiscal incentivizing, I don't understand why they wouldn't have done that, but they didn't. So I have an experience that I've never seen it personally. All of our patients that we suspect to be a COVID patient are tested, and then if they're negative, then they're negative, and whatever disease process that has befallen, then we treat it as that, not as, oh, well, now they probably have it. And if we suspect it, we test them again.
Great. With that all being said, let's switch gears for a moment. Do you think that there is a cure for COVID-19 that's not currently being used, that we're aware of that's not being used?
No, I don't think so. I think that would be a kind of a silly thing, I guess, to a degree. Why, if there was a cure and it was a privatized vaccine or whatever, and it could be brought to market, they could stand to make lots of money right now off of it, because it is a commodity that is desperately needed. And, you know, if it was private sector that created the vaccine and they're holding out on it, I don't see why right now wouldn't be the time to release it and make a boatload of money off of it. So I think that, again, is something that just doesn't make sense to me. And vaccines take a fairly long time to create and be successful and accurate. And when things evolve, even like the flu, you know, you're never going to get a full-blown effective vaccine, as it were. So even when we have the means to make them, they aren't as successful as we would like them to be.
Sure. Overall, would you recommend that people watch this movie?
I guess it depends on what lens you're going to watch it through. If you're highly susceptible to propaganda and you like misinformation, I guess maybe not watch it. But if you are someone that can critically analyze and kind of peer through a lot of the BS and kind of see that the first 10 minutes of the movie don't even make sense to the last 10 minutes of the movie, to me at least, I would say, if you want to watch it just to, I don't know, I thought it was pretty dumb, personally, for lack of a better word.
Totally dumb.
I fell asleep the first time you watched it.
So, yeah, I know. I had to make you watch it.
Yeah, I had to watch it a second time, and I didn't really want to watch it the second time to begin with either. But yeah, I don't think it adds any value or really adds or raises any superior questions to this whole situation everyone's living in right now. So I think there's a better use of 20 minutes in your life when everyone has lots of time. So if you're really strapped for something to do, I guess you could watch it.
If you can even find it.
If you can find it.
YouTube keeps removing it as it does go against guidelines. So you said that this isn't a valuable source right now. Are there any valuable sources that you can think of that you would recommend for people to stay informed?
I think, you know, depending on where you choose to get your news from is huge. You know, that can impact what kind of perspective you're going to take on or get the information you're going to get on this topic. But I think if you really like dry material and page turner, scientific journals and medical journals are really kind of good places to cut through the BS and get real hard information about it. For things like diseases and drugs that I run into at work, I use an app on my phone called Medscape, and that sends news alerts about what any updates to COVID-19 that are coming out, up to date, which is more so for drugs or procedures and treatments and things like that. But that's another one that constantly updates the newest resources that are out there to add to a pool of reputable data.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's a good suggestion. I didn't know about the Medscape app.
Yeah.
Not that I would
be using it. Yeah, I don't know why you would be using it.
Just to be in the know.
Yeah, just to be in the know, for sure.
Yeah, just to have that fresh info.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So can you tell us more about what it's like working in a hospital right now?
Well, it's tough. I mean, if you're working with COVID patients, you're in like head-to-toe personal protection equipment, so you have N95 mask, eye protection, either a face shield or goggles covering your eyes, an extra gown that is like a greenhouse or a garbage bag on your body, so you just are sweating profusely in it. And then you go into negative air pressure rooms that are constantly sucking out the air and recycling the air. And I'm someone that always gets super hot, no matter what. So I'm always just dying of heat exhaustion in there. And then you're just in a room or a floor, a space, a unit that is filled with really, really sick patients on ventilators. And it's exhausting because you're in a room or a unit where you can't get a drink of water after breathing in your own air over and over and over again into a mask. So you have a really dry mouth, your nose is running and just draining all over your face. And you can't go use the bathroom when you want because it's a closed unit. You're not using the bathrooms because you got to keep your protective equipment on. And usually for us on my unit, we have very, very sick COVID-19 patients where even the ventilators can't effectively breathe for the patient anymore, and they are on equipment that is called ECMO, that is effectively oxygenating and removing carbon dioxide outside of the body through a device. And I don't know if I just said it was called ECMO, but it's called ECMO, and it basically breathes for the patient, access the lungs outside the body, and the vent is effectively just pushing air in and trying to oxygenate through the lungs, but keeping the lungs expanded. And so we have those patients on our unit, our close COVID side, and it's a one-to-one, and it makes it even more difficult to just go take a break and use the bathroom or get a drink, because on that side you have someone watching those pumps, the ECMO pumps. That's one person, and then you have one patient, one nurse, so there aren't a lot of us as resources to be able to just walk away whenever we want to use the bathroom or get a drink. So it's tough and it's exhausting. Unfortunately those N95s are really good at filtering air particles, but they're also not really good at getting fresh air in, so you're breathing, it's like breathing into a paper bag over and over and over again, so you get really tired and extra amounts of carbon dioxide going back into your brain. So it's hard, it's tiring.
It sounds really tiring, and I give so much credit to you and all of your colleagues for doing this right now, for being part of this profession.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. I mean, they're all working hard. Yeah, I give them a lot of credit, too. It's everyone that's working in COVID units, it's tough right now. I mean, we have really, really sick patients that can kind of get better or perceive to get better and then turn to not good at all very quickly. They're just very unstable patients, and it can be very scary because they're just so unstable. And it isn't just like your 95-year-old grandma that's right there. We have patients that anywhere from 21 to 45, 50-year-olds there, and it's tough. Like, it's really tough. I mean, it's affecting everyone, not just, immunocompromised and elderly. There is no real definitive answer as to why it is affecting the people that it is affecting.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that's one of the most common misconceptions about all of this, is that it is only affecting, like you said, the elderly or those who are already sick.
And it is for the vast majority, but that doesn't give you free rein to, like, the people that feel like their civil liberties are being infringed on
Sure.
for not wearing masks. They could very well get sick.
Sure. And I think some of the, I can't think of specific names right now, but I remember reading articles where some individuals who have been the most vocal about their liberties being taken away from them are actually, you know, some of the individuals who have gotten sick and unfortunately, I think, like, have died in spite of being younger and healthy otherwise. So, like you said, it can really happen to anyone. Anyone can get sick with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's crazy. Absolutely. Yeah, crazy.
When you decided to go back to school for nursing a couple years ago, did you think that this is what you'd be walking into?
I mean, I knew I'd be working with sick patients, really sick patients, based on just the nature of the job that I applied for and got on in the cardiovascular ICU, but no, I definitely wasn't like, hell yeah, I'm a nurse now. I'm going to be working during a pandemic treating patients that have a disease that no one's really familiar with. Yeah, that's, can't wait for that to start happening.
It's going to be the best.
It's going to be the best. Yeah. Can't wait. But, I mean, it stinks. It's tough on everybody, but, I mean, you got to, you know, take each situation as an opportunity to learn something, and there's a lot to learn each day from this as we learn more and more about the disease process and the treatments that are working versus what really isn't working and kind of how to go from here. And then if this isn't something, which I can't imagine, it'll be kind of like the flu, that I don't think it will go away, and then we'll be better equipped and have more knowledge on how to treat these patients more effectively and in a more timely manner.
Yeah. Excellent. So as we start to, you know, tie things up, as we start to put a bow on this interview, are there any unexpected or uplifting positive stories that you've seen come out of all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, especially in Buffalo, which is, you know, the city of good neighbors, like, it's been amazing just the amount of generosity and sense of community that we've seen supporting the healthcare professionals during this time, like food donation, lots of food donations that it's crazy. Like, there's pizzerias, Imperial Pizza has donated pizzas to every unit on the hospital since this all started every day. And I can't imagine what that is like for them, but it's huge for us because there's times where we're working so many days just to meet the needs of what is happening here at our hospital or at the COVID only hospital down the road. And people don't have time to go grocery shopping. And honestly, the general public doesn't really like seeing nurses going grocery shopping when they have the time to do it, which might be right when they get off a shift or right before they go into a shift in their scrubs. And that stinks. So having people donate food and show that they're appreciative of everything that we're trying to do for our members of the community as well has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add today?
Thanks for having me, I guess. I don't know. I'm glad I made the cut finally. Like, yeah. I said in the beginning, been just sitting here listening to you chat away with everyone and just like, I gotta be quiet. Can't turn on the TV right now.
Well, thanks for joining me at the kitchen table today, Brian, even though you really didn't have a choice because
I didn't have a choice.
Because you're married to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's fine.
And happy Nurses Week to you and all of the other amazing nurses who are saving lives right now.
Absolutely.
Thanks again to Brian for joining us and helping me talk through the COVID-19 conspiracy theories that are currently running rampant on the internet. It was illuminating to hear from someone who is working in a hospital and treating COVID-19 patients on a daily basis. As Brian said, not having answers right now can be infuriating, but it's important to rely on information from trustworthy sources. Scholarly journals are always a good place to start when searching for information. after recording this episode, I found an article entitled Misinformation of COVID-19 on the Internet in the Journal of Medical Internet Research. This article reminded me that we're not just fighting an epidemic, we're fighting an infodemic. Fake news pertaining to the coronavirus is spreading faster than the virus itself. Now more than ever, it is important that we all remain aware of the quality of the information that we read and share online. Stay strong, stay healthy, stay social, and thanks for listening to Social Quarantine.